mission was going to be at that point in time.
Yeah, I mean, the boycott was, until that time, was like life and death for the union. And the migrant ministry was a big part of that. By the way, we had become the National Farm Worker Ministry in 1971. And so the migrant ministry morphed into, the California migrant ministry morphed into the National Farm Worker Ministry. And Richard Cook came from New Jersey in 1972, along with a lot of other people. And so I could feel that our role would be different, that what we were doing would not be as important anymore. And that, coupled with the fact that I was probably getting tired of traveling, tired of trying to live three lives with the office in LA, with my family in LA, and with the farm workers movement all over the state of California, and the boycott all over the country, tired of re-educating a new generation of church leaders, you know, every 5 or 10 years. But mostly sensing that, our role would be, you know, less important, less significant. So I began to feel restless as the director of the National Farm Worker Ministry.
How do you think, though, the law changed what was needed in terms of organizing and support for the organizing that was going on? Because it was a different kind of organizing now.
Well,
organizing in the fields versus organizing in the cities, right?
Exactly. Organizing in the fields, elections, victories in elections, certification of elections, contract negotiations. There was no time to establish a boycott that would be known around the country. I mean, boycotts came and went, but they were usually quick. And there was no time for anybody around, you know, outside of the, California or outside of the workforce itself to know that there was a boycott. So people who had been involved for years could no longer be involved in the same way. However, the law was very weakly enforced at its, at the beginning. Nobody knew what they were doing. So it took a lot of church pressure, a lot of church presence and pressure on the governor to get a better enforcement of the law. And that changed a lot of things. Eventually, the UFW won so many elections, the Teamsters, you know, negotiated their withdrawal from the fields. And the law was, to some extent, working.
But what I'm trying to get you to talk about a little, because I think it's important, is the transition in terms of organizing. So Jim Drake, for example, made the transition from the kind of work he was doing organizing on the boycott to running elections, and he did that very successfully. Not everyone, the same thing happened to volunteers for the union. Some people who had been good at organizing picket lines weren't necessarily, those skills weren't necessarily transferable. I mean, it was a time, right, when there was a transition, and I think that's sort of an important point.
Yeah,
to talk
not only
about.
Transition, but I mean disruption to some extent. I mean, people left.
Because
people left because they couldn't do what needed to be done, or because the union felt that they felt they couldn't do what needed to be done. So a lot of folks left at that time. Boycott cities were closed down. People like Olga Salmon felt abandoned. I mean, like this had become her life in Chicago, and then we were leaving her. I mean, there was a reason we were leaving her, but it didn't change her feelings about it. She felt abandoned. It's kind of strange when you think about it, right? Workers come to the city, they organize people, they get them involved, they win victories, and then they leave, and the supporters feel, why did they do this to me? But I mean, it's totally understandable, but a little weird.
And how do you, could you talk a little bit about Caesar and how he made or did not make his difficulty making that transition and what his interests were, and then we'll go from there into the communes. How's that?
Yeah. Let me first say, pretty much everything I thought about that time is in retrospect. I mean, I was a true believer. I mean, where Caesar went, I went. Sometimes that was, most of the time that was good, but not all the time. So in that time, it seemed like Caesar was kind of like, what, losing his interest in the nuts and bolts of organizing farm workers' union? He began to, you know, concentrate on community, on, you know, community life at La Paz, at the headquarters in La Paz, which is like a former sanitarium, TB sanitarium in the hills above Bakersfield.
Right, we should ask or say that in 1971, Chavez moved the headquarters of the union from Delano, which was very much the heart of the farm worker community, to La Paz, which is sort of the middle of nowhere, but was a very large area that could be where hundreds of people could live, right?
And we began to play the sit-and-on game.
Don't get to that.
Oh, okay.
Talk about the, I mean, because I think it's important to sort of,
it's a key
turning point here. So what?
His interests seemed to expand, shall we say. But they didn't. I mean, he had always had these interests. They became visible. His interests became visible. His interest is other than a farm workers union, like a communal farm for farm workers. Communal. And community life, building community at La Paz, at the headquarters.
And you're the person that he talks to about this.
Yes. He talked to me a lot about this. And he asked me to do research on the Hutterites and on kibbutzim and on the community of the Ark in Italy on the Taizé community in France. And so we researched all these communal groups and sort of like, how did they do it? And what were the problems? What was good and what was bad? What were the problems? What were the issues? What was the conflict that would create it in these communal settings? But anyway.
You're meeting with the papal delegate?
Oh, yeah, let's forget that part.
There's a section of the book that talks at some length about this, and I just want to say that for most of the people who were in the book who lived through this, that is probably the thing that I get the most comments on, how surprised they were by, you know, that they knew nothing of this going on. So you were very much a part of this, but it was often one piece of the world, and then there was all this other stuff going on in the elections in the fields. And you were not really involved in that, right? Except when there was a boycott or something.
Well, I spent
like
some time in Santa Maria helping in the office there as the elections were going on. But mostly we were involved by bringing church people to observe the lack of enforcement of the law in the fields. And then getting church people to put pressure on the governor, you know, to do something about it, which he did. And it got better. It got much better. But it took pressure. I mean, you know, but it was fairly easy because for Brown, this was like a feather in one of his biggest feathers in his big cap.
So you were still very involved in the fight aspects of this, correct? I mean, not so much in the peacetime administering, but whenever there was a battle.
Yep.
And now we get to the period that you dubbed at the time the Cultural Revolution.
Mm.
So why did you call it that?
Does anyone have any questions at this point? I mean, I think people are wearing down. I can see it in their faces. Anybody out there have any questions?
I'm sure they will after you explain the Cultural
Revolution.
I'm sure they'll have questions.
At this point, any questions?
Well, I'm sorry, and I don't want to undermine your question, Aaron, but I do. I've got lots of questions, but already we've had this allusion. I mean, we've got a lot of folks in the audience here. I mean, everybody. There's people in this room who also have been directly affected. They've been pointed out individually, but I would be at some point. We don't have to do it now, but I would like to kind of maybe go around
and people would
just to introduce themselves.
I think so. That I think we should get through the Cultural Revolution, and I think you should talk about the Philippines.
Okay. Well, I'd like to go around now for my own sake. Okay, I'd like to take a break and go around and have people introduce themselves.
Well, I.
You orchestrate that, John.